Good morning. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. We got Monday. Calvin, how do people call into this show?
You can call in at 844-967-2789.
All right. Well, we've got some callers. David from Mequon. David, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. And hello to John. Nice to hear your voice on the air again. So I obviously, I've been listening to your conversation here in detail. One thing I would mention, so you briefly mentioned about SpaceX, and you know that's privately owned, and they have substantially reduced the cost as to what NASA has been spending, because there's an incentive on the private side to obviously to make a profit. And in that sense, I shouldn't be comparing apples to apples, but the reason why it's come down substantially is because there's incentive to cut costs at all possible points and still get the same result or better than what's currently being done. And I would point out, and you guys were mentioning about the MRIs, and yes, that's a very common machine now. You can literally have it done like in an outpatient office facility now. I would point to LASIK eye surgery. When that first came out, was exponentially very expensive. And consequently, because it is pretty much private and that level, you can really get a tremendous, it's come down in price tremendously.
Well, actually, David, let's talk about LASIK, though. LASIK was never covered by insurance. It was discretionary insurance.
Correct.
Paid for out of people's pockets. And so they were cost conscious. So, okay, this is exactly what John is talking about. We live in a system where, yes, we have private health insurance, but the very, you know, and the government is currently only a third of the spend, right? That third is a big number, but it's only one third of the total medical care spend. The rest of the medical care spend is all private. And the vast amount of our hospital provisions are provided through private entities, okay? You know, we can say that Aurora St. Luke's is a not-for-profit, but that's really that's not a fair characterization of it. They make huge reserves. They operate in every way like a for-profit organization would. But the problem is the system that we've set up in America doesn't have this feedback loop like you described for LASIK. I'm glad you mentioned LASIK, because LASIK is a unique is one of the unique areas where it's always essentially only been covered by private expenditures.
Well, I wanted to really quickly just point out, so you guys mentioned both Medicare and Medicaid, and they're a little bit less than what the defense budget is on each, you know, on each level. That being the case, what you did not mention was the fact that we have an ornate amount of money in the ACA law for subsidies to help out with lower-income Americans. I don't know what that number is off the top of my head, but I'm sure that's
it's a big number.
Substantial. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so almost $1 trillion.
Probably when you factor that in, Sandy, you go from one-third between the Medicare and Medicaid, we're probably pushing closer to like 60% government run amount of money.
David, just one second. Government run. No, it's government funded. It's government funded in the same insulated way for the user as tax, as insurance. So yes, this is a tax-based fund, but it's handled in every way as if it was third-party insurance. So you go to the hospital, you get serviced, and it gets paid for. And if you're poor, it gets paid for by Medicaid. If you're not poor, it gets paid for by your insurer. But you are insulated from the knowledge of the cost of it, okay? And so it isn't much different in that respect in terms of how it moderates the amount we spend in terms of our spend as a percentage of GDP.
But I would also add this, Andy, and I don't know if John could, you know, delve into this. So my father, who's 87, has a Medicare Advantage plan. So that is through Humana. And again, there is a subsidy from the federal government to cover the expenses that Medicare does not cover, because it doesn't cover 100%. There's a lot of things that it is left out of the equation. So, again, I would just point out the fact that there is a huge correlation between big business, in this case, big health industry, and the government. And consequently, you have where it's like they're kind of like in cahoots together. And the costs are just exorbitant because you have a lot of, I think, inefficiencies between the two, because you literally have the government saying, well, you have to provide this. The insurance company is saying, okay, this is what we got to do. Keep in mind, there's no more caps on the ACA. So, you know, we used to have caps. I think it was, you know, several million per citizen, you know, prior to the ACA law coming into play. But now that you have unlimited, you know, it's that the company has to factor in there. What if that person, you know, decides to, I don't know, they go in for a very expensive procedure. Let's say my dad, hypothetically, my dad is, his health is okay. It's not the best. But at his age, I don't think there's a really a sit down with the patient in this case. Let's say, how much is this really going to cost you? And we never really know the price of certain procedures because that's never really published.
Well,
other than maybe like once or twice a year, section of all things.
Yeah, let me just cut to the chase for you, Dave. I mean, I think what you're outlining is the very problem that John and I are talking about, which is the insulation of our system from disciplined buyers and the problem of K Street lobbying, which has insulated the buyer, which is the government, from exercising discipline with respect to the costs that it reimburses. And, of course, the insurance industry, which has a whole set of incentives that move it in the direction of not trying to have lower premiums and lower costs, but the opposite. So the reason I wanted to feature this on the show today is that we spend an awful lot of time, conservatives and liberals, arguing and talking about the brush fires. But we've got in the United States a couple of very festering wounds, which if we solved it, could solve, you know, for instance, if we spent, you know, you've identified along with John $1.5 trillion a year of expenditure in the healthcare industry, that if we were spending not $12,000 per capita, but $8,000 per capita would be $1 trillion, not $1.5 trillion. We'd be saving $500 billion of federal expenditures, which is a huge number with respect to the taxes we have to achieve to pay it, a huge number with respect to comparisons to the deficits we run each year. It's a huge burden. I wanted to move on to John. Thank you, David, for calling in. And I think you highlight exactly. And the reason I have this going today is I wish that the American public would push its potential candidates. I wish CJ, a frequent caller, would push his conservative candidates towards solving the healthcare issues in the United States and the healthcare costs. John from Buzz, welcome for your calling in, and what do you have to say?
Yeah, I started my life at General Electric Medical Systems, first building CAT scanners in production before we ship them to the customer or hospital. Then I got into research and MRI. Now, I wanted to say that's where I came from. Today, do you remember how the old times were where you went to high school and the worst thing you could get caught doing was smoking in the boys' room?
Well, I suppose if you were smoking in the girls' room, John, you'd get in more trouble. But yeah.
Yeah, and that would be compounded interest.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I wanted to say something. I'm reading John Bolton's book right now about his working for Donald Trump. And he points out a few good facts, if we could focus on that for a little bit.
Is it, John, just tell me this, is it going to be related to healthcare or is it going to be related to reasons why we ought to worry about Donald Trump running for president in 2024?
Well, let's focus on healthcare today.
Okay, that's good.
And I was paid to build those CAT scanners.
Incidentally, well, John started his career at GE Medical Systems too. So apparently, it spawned a lot of you folks.
Yeah, in the MRI group, the original MRI group.
Yes, they called it NMR.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear
didn't resonate well from a marketing perspective. So.
Yeah, and so that's where we came from, you know. Well, back then, John, a slice was $1,500 for one picture of your inside of your brain, you mm-hmm. know, between your ears. $1,500 back then. That was 40 years ago. Well, guess what? 40 times 10, if you go, that's four decades. Now, kids, number one thing for kids is entertainment, and they're shooting up each other on television with these game shows.
Yeah. Well,
that's the biggest seller.
Yeah. John, thank you for your call. And we do need to work on, I mean, one of the things you point out, this relationship between costs then and now, is that some of these costs have not gone down. Some obviously have based on the development of the technology. But what is true is that to get something done in the United States almost always costs more than to get the same thing done elsewhere. You know, I flew to Turkey, and there were people from America flying over to Turkey to have hair transplants because how much cheaper it was in Turkey. And there is lots of medical vacationing that's ongoing now, medical travel from the United States to other places to take advantage of the lower costs which are being realized in those countries. And in large part, it's being realized because the healthcare systems in those countries are organized differently to have more interest in cost controls. We'll be back after the break to talk some more about health.
Come. Why was that so important? And undoing that employer-paid system is going to be very difficult. And so we will need the participation of employers.
But employers would like to get out from under it. I mean, it has become It has become a hell of a problem for employers in terms of the expense. And, you know, I think that increasingly employers might be in favor of, Medicare for all. Medicare for all gets rid of it for them. But not that Medicare for all.
Or HSAs for all. You know, it's if you want to say this portion of your compensation goes towards your HSA, I could see that.
But you need to have catastrophic, you need catastrophic insurance above that.
Yeah, but then individuals buy that on their own.
Bright sunshine expected tomorrow. Eyes level off around 82. Temperatures near average.
Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. Calvin, how do people call into this show?
The number is 844-967-2789.
Okay. This morning we're talking about health. I decided to have a kind of a featured issue, and I thought we would feature an issue that really is an underlying problem in the American economy. It's the kind of massive problem that our politicians ought to be focused on. We ought to be focused on solving. You know, we had the huge debate that related to Obamacare, which really was not going to solve the underlying problem of how much we spend as a percentage of our GDP on healthcare and the healthcare system. John, and I've got John Hopkins on. John is a computer scientist who's devoted his professional career to the health industry and is now very knowledgeable, involved in trying to set up pathways for people to avoid some of the problems associated with health insurance, the cost of health insurance, and also to diminish the cost of healthcare. And we'll talk about that in a while. But John, how did our American system get to this process? I mean, you know, we're about the only country that depends on employers to pay for healthcare. It's a mm-hmm. benefit that has become a big problem in negotiations. Employers have been trying to get out from underpaying benefits of all sorts. They've tried to back out of pensions. Pensions are a big problem for as a cost and as a cost control measure. And now healthcare, this burden of us spending, you know, 50 to 60% more per capita on healthcare is a burden basically borne by industry. How do we get here?
It is. Well, and the United States is fairly unique in this way. You know, before about, say, let's say 1930, there wasn't a lot of healthcare to buy. You basically, you know, you maybe splinted up a broken arm. There was no penicillin before the turn of the century. So there just wasn't a lot of healthcare to buy. But as there started to become more demand for more expensive healthcare, there was a little bit of insurance that showed up in the 1930s. But what really happened was in World War II, Executive Order 9250, which was signed by Roosevelt, said that you couldn't increase wages because of the potential inflationary issues due to the labor shortage. But they did allow you to offer additional benefits. And so companies started saying, we'll pay for your health insurance as a benefit in lieu of an increased salary. And this immediately became entrenched.
And also, these companies must have helped organize the Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance organizations then?
Blue Cross Blue Shield had been organized in the 30s. Blue Cross in Texas representing hospital systems, and then the providers by Blue Shield in California in the early 1930s. And then they merged in 1982. The other interesting thing that happened was the IRS allowed those benefits to be tax deductible for the companies. And so the cost allowed them to reduce their tax obligation. But one of the perverse outcomes of this is that in 2017, for example, that resulted in about $260 billion in lost tax revenue. So you have this double whammy that companies were dependent on this benefit to both attract employees and also as a tax deduction.
Well, salaries are tax deductible too. So this was right. An alternative to salary. But I think what you do point out is that to the extent that the United States spends 50% more per capita for healthcare means that number, that $260 billion of lost tax revenue, could be much smaller than that. It could be $180 billion of lost tax revenue. It could be $80 billion more of tax revenue if we had the same kind of per capita cost. So again, I bring us back to the fact that in the U.S., by spending 50% more per capita on healthcare and getting worse medical outcomes, it is costing the government money in terms of lost taxes to a significant degree, but it's also costing the government a substantial amount, maybe $500 billion of excess expenditures on the healthcare benefits that are paid for by the government. So you point out something that is sort of expandable from the standpoint of, okay, this is a problem for industry, but it's a huge problem for government.
Right. And people have become dependent on this notion that they get their health insurance through their companies. So this is that extra layer of insulation that I mentioned before. They have no idea. If you ask the average employee, what does your health insurance cost? They go, I don't know. I pay $200 in a month, but after that, I have no idea, not realizing that there's probably a $1,800 to $2,000 premium on top of that that their company pays per month. So that's a huge load on their potential salary increase.
And one of the problems with this whole insurance program is that the way insurance companies make profits relates to the size of the premiums they receive, right? And the size of the premiums they receive relates directly to the total costs of medical care that they pay out for. So good morning, Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. This morning we're talking about healthcare. I'm talking to John Hopkins, a friend, but also a guy who knows a lot about the healthcare industry. And what I'm trying to highlight by featuring this for the whole 2 hour period is to the fact that the American economy has a serious problem. It has a couple of serious problems, but one of the most glaring serious problems is the extent to which we as a people, we spend too much on healthcare and we get outcomes that are inferior to the rest of the world. We have the most sophisticated potential healthcare delivery system, but we don't have access to it in the same manner that every other country gives access to healthcare to its people. Our outcomes aren't as good. And as the result of this huge expense, whether you're paying increased insurance premiums to cover the expense, or whether you're paying increased taxes, which are much like insurance premiums to bear the cost of what the government provides in healthcare, we're spending way too much of our money on healthcare. It's a parasite, and it's a drug on the market, so to speak. It's not good for our economy. We were talking about how we got here, and John was talking before the break about how it was that our employers became the people who provided us with our health care. I mean, I know that a baby boomer like me, when I took a job, I never worried about health care. You took a job and you immediately were covered by health care insurance. And when you went to college, you were covered by the health care insurance at the college. And, you know, this is something that didn't surface as a problem for America until, you know, in maybe the 1980s, when people began to realize that they maybe weren't covered with health care. You know, we got there, and then this health care insurance thing, what are the incentives for the health care insurer to keep costs down, John?
Well, they have two elements to it. One is what they charge as premiums to their customers, and then the second is the rates they've negotiated with providers to compensate them for the services that are covered. And this is this separate opaque layer that we don't know what they're paying. In fact, most of the contracts threaten severe legal action if you disclose the actual compensation you receive from the insurance company.
But the healthcare insurer, the larger the premiums, the more the profit, right? So they're interested in having premiums go up. They might be interested year to year in squeezing the supplier in terms of what they reimburse, but in the long run, their total incentive is not to have the costs of healthcare in the United States go down. They want they would be incented, if you looked at it from the standing back and looking at the forest, the insurer's incentive would be consistent with having healthcare costs go up. Isn't that correct?
Yes. Even if they maintain just the same margin, the way they increase their revenue is to have their total cost go up. And so there's really no incentive for them to reduce that cost of healthcare. The only incentive they have is the somewhat competitive market of somebody shopping for different premiums. But typically, an insurance company will have a lock on an area. And the reality is that most groups don't have that much of a choice.
And one of the other problems with insurance is that while the government mandated what the government certainly needed to mandate, which is that pre-existing conditions be covered by health insurance, they were unable to mandate that everyone get health insurance. And so the health insurance pool is filled with people who believe they need insurance, right? And the people who believe they need insurance are the ones who are older, who think they might be sick or are sick already. So that the insurance pool is filled with more probably sick people than the general population.
That's correct. And also, just by our very population, it is getting sicker and sicker because we are getting older. We are skewing, the population skews older, and older people require more medical care.
So with respect to health insurance, if you have private health insurance, you might expect or hope that the private health insurer would have an incentive to screw down the costs, to put pressure on the costs of health care, and get us so that we were more likely not to spend 50% more per capita on health care than every other developed country. But the fact is, they don't have that incentive. And then if we had health care for all, if we essentially had Medicare for all, that would be a government, essentially, insurance program in which everybody would be in that pool. You would have the benefit of mandated participation. The premium wouldn't be negotiated or the subject of competition. It would be mandated by a tax level. But there would be the potential for that government to exercise the discipline of a buyer to put pressure on the sellers to keep the price down. That could happen theoretically, right?
That could. The likelihood of it happening in the United States is pretty much zero.
And it's zero. I think it's zero because, as we know, the lobbyists in Washington who represent the healthcare providers, the hospitals, the healthcare insurers, who represent big pharma, make sure to tie the hands of the government to keep it from being a tough negotiator on these costs.
That's right. And so that herein lies the key element, which is most of our discussions are oriented around how to pay for the healthcare. You know, who's paying for the insurance, how much the insurance is, what's the structure of that. Virtually no discussion about how to fundamentally change the cost of the actual healthcare itself. And until we do, it's sort of a meaningless exercise to try and figure out how to rearrange the chairs on the deck of the Titanic.
And let's just talk about that for a minute, because whether you write a check to the government as a tax or whether you write a check to an insurance company for the premium on health insurance, it doesn't make any difference. If you got rid of all the health insurance premiums and your taxes went up some, it would go up by something like the healthcare premium that you otherwise were going to pay. And so it's just dollars out the door, right?
Right. So until you have truly a competitive market where the buyer, who in our case should be the patient, is making the decision about how those dollars are spent, there is no incentive for anyone to truly lower the cost and innovate. And this is the whole premise of the free market healthcare approach, which is there will be no change until that happens. Yet the forces of the insurance company, of the healthcare systems, and even the providers themselves, by providers, I mean clinicians, that is not in their interest to reduce the income of a hospital system or to reduce the income or elimination of an insurance company. And most providers are not interested in reducing their incomes. So we're in a very tough spot. And yet, until we actually put the decision-making in the hands of the buyer, you personally saying, I'm going to shop around and I want to see how much this costs me, clearly posted someplace, that until that happens, I'm afraid it will just keep going up because there's no transparency and there's no decision making.
Yeah,
I can't go to a physician and say, hey, how much, go and ask your physician how much your colonoscopy is, and they will to every single one of them, they'll say, I have no idea how much it costs.
Yeah, I mean, to the credit of the Trump administration, I think they did try to create by executive order, a requirement that these kind of costs be posted and be publicly available. But, John, you're involved now in a process in which there is the potential for direct market kind of reactions to try and control these costs. Can you explain quickly how that works?
Sure. There's a couple elements to it. One is that you have a system whereby providers sell their services directly to the consumer. In other words, the consumer, the patient, is the one paying for it, 100% of it. Now, they may have catastrophic insurance, meaning if it's above, say, $300,000.
So let's just talk about that for a minute. So let's say that you decide that you're going to bear the potential risk of $20,000 of out-of-pocket costs for your own health care. That's not too different from buying bronze care insurance right now, because it's going to cost you about $18,000 of a combination of premium and deductible to get your first dollar of insurance coverage if you have bronze care insurance.
That's correct.
So if you decided you're going to bear that risk and just pay that, and then you decided to buy insurance to cover all of your costs above $20,000 a year, you could buy that health insurance quite cheaply. And so you would have a much, much, much lower premium to cover the catastrophic loss, and you would bear the risk of whether or not you were going to spend anything like the health insurance premium plus the deductible out of your own pocket in any given year, right?
Right, and you're incented to take care of yourself so that you don't incur those costs. Now, there's always going to be
and
happenstance,
but the flip side
that
of this
doesn't happen at all.
Is that you would have, let's say, internists, these general practitioners, who would be willing to take payment from you directly. They would charge you maybe the same as the reimbursement level they would get from an insurance company, but they will operate independently from a hospital system, and they will be willing to provide you with that primary care on a cash basis that could minimize your out-of-pocket costs while at the same time providing you with good primary care.
That's correct. And so the idea is that you're eliminating the overhead of the insurance-based system, which is very expensive for a lot of providers.
Well, and if they're independent, you might be avoiding some of the overheads of the hospital system, which they would otherwise be employed by.
That's right. And so a hospital system will often say, well, we also treat all these patients that walk in the door and use emergency room as their primary care. Well, that's because it's a path of least resistance. If you had easily accessible primary care, like you do in a lot of countries, people would not be going to the emergency room. And so what turns into a $700 visit at the ER could easily be treated for $25 or $30 at an easily accessible primary care facility.
Which, of course, would go immediately towards reducing that $12,000 per capita that's spent U.S. resident on health care by making more efficient this process at the introductory level with interns.
Right. And so you have this system where people are now making a decision about their health care, and providers publish those prices. I had an interesting conversation with a physician not long ago. I was describing the system, and I said, well, the prices would be published. And he goes, well, how do you know they're accurate? And I said, well, it's because it's the physician themselves that's publishing it. It's by definition accurate. We are so used to this cat and mouse game where we try and figure out what the real cost is by having to get around the transparency rules, by calling a hospital and saying, well, how much is this going to cost me? Well, it all depends on your plan. It all depends on this. It all depends on that. And so we're used to this idea that it's an unknowable entity. Every other business you know of posts what it's going to cost.
Well, and in fact, this process is available today, isn't it? There are some practitioners who are doing exactly this, who are taking providing primary care for direct payment from the patient on a cash basis, not on an insurance basis, and they're in a position to make referrals to hospital, et cetera, so that the patient is in line to get the very same kind of care they otherwise would get.
If you go to the Oklahoma Surgery Center, for example, go to their website, they have a menu of all of the different myriad orthopedic procedures that they perform and the exact quoted price that you will pay when you come in for that procedure.
Yeah. Well, you know, so my point here is that there are methods. We have both governmental pressure we need to apply as well as private choices we can use. We're going to a break. We'll be back shortly. Bill from Oconomowoc is on the line. I've got John Hopkins. We're talking about healthcare. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show, Monday, Juneteenth. And today we're talking about healthcare, talking to John Hopkins, a friend and also an expert in the subject. Calvin, how do people call in, although we've only got a little bit left in this segment?
The number is 844-967-2789.
Okay, I think we've got Bill from Oconomowoc who's called in. Bill, what say you? How are you this morning?
Great. And just probably... purposeful driven topic with tons of information. If I believe we can do a lot about healthcare costs without giving politicians help, basically showing the country, hey, this system works the best, this system is expensive. We all know that, how to do that. And then, as we speak, I have friends that are going through serious health concerns, and we're finding the grant money, we're finding all kinds of things of dealing with it, but it's knowledge. And thank you guys. So if you have a link, I'm going to hang up because you've got too much to talk about. I got to hang up. But if you've got a link to what you're talking about, I myself want to become a healthcare advocate for my community. So let me know. I'm going to hang up. A great topic. Keep talking, but we can bring the cost down without politicians getting involved. Thank you.
Well, yeah, and I think the reason I wanted to have John on is that I hate to hold my breath for the politicians to solve this problem. Here we have this huge, glaring problem, hundreds of billions of dollars to be saved in our economy were we to address it, and yet we can't seem to get our politicians' attention, and they pay attention to all kinds of extraneous things. This is real money. This is a real impact on our economy. This is a real impact on the health of us, our children, our parents. And yet we can't seem to get a grip on it. John, you've been talking about sort of a market mechanism that at least begins to address this in a real way. Mm-hmm. How does it work?
Well, there's two components of any free market, and that is the supply and the demand. No surprise there. On the demand side, you have patients that are willing to pay for their healthcare directly by making their buying decision based on the information they have. Then the second element is providers that will directly engage with the patient and accept payment from the patient and clearly publish their pricing and stand behind their product. And that means that you have healthcare organizations that will accept cash, and typically by cash we mean direct payment as opposed to through a underwritten insurance, and accept cash. And in return, it's a very simple, much simpler transaction. And that means that their costs are a lot lower. And they will typically engage with what are called self-funded entities. So if you pay for your own healthcare directly, you are self-funded, meaning you pay for it.
And before the break, we talked about how if you decide to be self-funded, you could buy catastrophic insurance to cover your risk that your annual health insurance or your annual health costs would exceed, say, $20,000. So you can bite off $20,000 of risk, which incidentally isn't a lot more than what you would pay for the lowest level kind of healthcare insurance, right? Bronze care.
Right.
So
and
for,
you may even
yeah, and
you may even have a higher level than that, because most people only about 30% of the population ever reaches their deductible.
Right. So
and that means that they are self-funded.
Right. So if you decide not to be insured, you're avoiding an insurance premium and a deductible cost, which you might never spend in a given year absent insurance, which is why a lot of people choose not to be insured. They take the risk. They roll the dice, but they haven't got that catastrophic insurance to protect them. And they also don't have a health network like you've described that is accepts cash.
Right. And that's a really important part, which is the providers themselves need to be able to offer these cash-based compensation. A lot of times there are contractual obligations to the insurance companies that say they can never offer a lower cash price than the lowest reimbursement that the insurance company offers. And that creates a very perverse system right there. So a lot of physicians will then divorce themselves from that and say, I only take cash. And so their customers are what are called self-funded companies. These are companies that
self-funded companies or self-funded individuals.
Or individuals. And the result is that they pay for their care directly. And so there's a much closer relationship between the buyer and the seller. And the seller is incented to keep their costs down. The buyer is incented to shop carefully for their health care. And so the final remark I want to make about that is that it would be in the best model where if the employer still wants to offer the benefit, they put money in an HSA, a health savings account, that the individual then uses to selectively buy their health care in that free market, causing the providers to become more and more innovative when it comes to actually reducing the cost. Can they provide levels of care, or more importantly, can they avoid necessarily expensive healthcare by taking a more proactive, more preventive-based approach to medicine?
And health savings accounts still are a part of our tax code, so that you can have a health savings account, which is not, so you can take money out of your income, avoid it being taxed as current income, and put it into a health savings account the same way you put it into an IRA. That health
Correct.
Savings account could be used to buy catastrophic health insurance, and it could also be used to pay for your own health requirements, or it could roll over to a future year and be stored as money to be to used against your health risks in future years.
So in future years.
So if you started at age 24 when you started being employed, setting up health savings accounts, maximizing the amount every year, you could by the time you're 55 have a healthy chest of money put aside for your health risks, and meanwhile that money is available to you in an emergency were you to need cash.
Mm-hmm. That is, and that's the whole point of it, and yet very, very few people ever exercise it.
Yeah. Well, John, I want to thank you for today. I think
that's been great.
I think that the public needs to understand the extent to which our health system, one, is broken. Two, isn't working, isn't providing us with the health care we both need, want, and desire. And three, needs to be fixed, not just to make sure that we all get healthier and better, not just so that we focus more on wellness, but so that we save an enormous amount of dollars that are otherwise spent in taxes or in tax-like premiums for our insurance. So anyway, another day, Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth. John, thanks a lot. We'll be seeing you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah.